From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to A Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, July 6th, 2023. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunathchish Hawa for joining the conversation. On today's show, a first Friday extravaganza. We've got a preview of various events and shows happening tomorrow, including Lily Hope is here to share about a year-long Pride Robes project, which kicks off tomorrow. Hollis Kitchen is here to chat about her event at Kindred Post, where she will be live sketching in watercolor and ink. And we'll have a preview of the Sea Alaska First Friday event with one of the artists, Ayanna James. Those conversations, Bird Note, Sounds Wild, music and more coming up this hour on A Juno Afternoon.
Hanson Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk are ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin talk anakaya ha ani kak gunish cheese.
Oh yeah, a little ka-chung with our stories. You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno and 91.7 Juno Auk Bay and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. A year-long project kicks off tomorrow. It's called Weaving Our Pride, and it's a project with support from a great number of folks, and you can also be a part of it. Here to share in the studio is the one and only Lily Hope, who is one of the leaders of the project, along with Nicholas, who's an intern at Gold Belt, who might be doing some documenting of this year-long project, which is pretty cool. Gunathchish, Lily, and Nicholas for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. It's so awesome. So first of all, Lily, for those who may be new to you, which there can't be many, will you grace us with an introduction and an update with all that's been going on with you?
Holy smokes. Do we have 25 minutes? No, just kidding. I'm Lily Hope. I'm a weaver of Raven's Tail and Chilcat Weaving. I'm carrying on the work that my mother, Clarissa Rizal, left in my care. Thought I was going to be an actor. Turns out I'm going to be a teacher. And I really love making community projects. So might have opened a show at the Smithsonian Institution just a couple months ago. There's also a show that I curated at the Juno Douglas City Museum with the largest collection of small Chilcat robes that have been woven in recent history. So up until 3, 4, or 5 months ago, there have been fewer than a dozen Chilcat blanket makers in history that can weave these full-size ceremonial robes. And because of our two-year apprenticeship virtually, there are now over two dozen of artists who can retain that spiritual and technical knowledge. But not here to talk about me. That just legitimizes my ability to like.
I just wanted to introduce people in case people have just moved here and they don't know who you are. But if you're in D.C., you can go to the Smithsonian.
Renwick.
Or
the Smithsonian Renwick Gallery.
Okay, the Renwick Gallery. Or if you're in Juno, hit the Juno Douglas City Museum, and that show is ongoing through. I think they're going to keep that going through like the end of the summer and maybe into the fall a little
bit. All the
way
through the end of October for sure.
Yeah.
And you can also find me at 221 Seward Street during the daytime between 10-ish and 2-ish in my public studio where we also share like what we're working on. It's explosions of chaotic projects all over the place.
Love
I've got
it.
Quite a few interns, but it's never boring. Come over and drink your tea with us and shoot the breeze and see what we're doing.
Yeah, go over there on your lunch hour, hang out. Nicholas, tell us a little bit about yourself. What are you doing at Gold Belt?
I'm currently an intern at Gold Belt. I'm mostly at the Lily Hope Wushkin Denda Art Studio, setting up different kits, which are like little weaving projects that are sold there.
Right.
Sometimes I'm doing different events with Gold Belt. That's pretty much it.
Awesome. Well, that's really cool. I love it. And so what is this Weaving Our Pride project all about, Lily?
We are gathering together at the Zach Gordon Youth Center with any youth of any identity, native, non-native, queer, transgender, cisgender, allies in all identities. We're going to sit side by side with mentor weavers up to 15 to 20 hours a week from now until the beginning of June of next year to create two robes, one in the Ravenstall technique and one in the Chilkat technique, utilizing rainbow pride colors.
Oh.
So awesome.
That is, and people out there who may not know how long weaving takes, they're like, oh, can't you just throw those together, like start in March or something?
Sure.
No.
The Ravenstall one we estimate is going to take anywhere from 800 to 1,000 hours of human power. And the Chilkat one is similar because we're not doing some curvilinear ovoids and things like that. We're going to do bands of rainbow color.
Yeah.
But we're going to bring in a textured pattern called Haida spider web. And do a follow the leader kind of deal. So the mentor weaver will weave one row and the student will come behind and weave exactly the same row, which is going to dilate this diamond pattern that's just gorgeous.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, it's going to be pretty epic. We're already dreaming at 2 a.m. about it. You know, it's amazing.
That's good. And so who's going to be involved on the teaching side?
We have Ricky Tagaban, Ray Mills, Lane Reinhardt, Melina Meyer, Hannah Schempf, Jody Watts filling in. And then I'm going to fill in whenever any of my mentor weavers are out of town or, you know, sometimes you just have to go fishing.
Right.
Yes, I'm talking to Ricky. he just has to give me 24 hours notice and I'll fill in his shift.
Okay, good.
The cool thing is that three of these six mentor weavers identify as queer. One mentor weaver has queer children. And the space that's being held by these weavers is, you know, safe, healing, affirmative, inspiring. Mentors and youth are going to meet 5 days a week for at least 3 hours. Tuesday through Saturday with rotating mentors each of those days.
Wow.
So you can kind of like, oh, I really love working with Melina. So you can go and show up whenever Melina's there.
I see. So this is going to take place. You said 5 days a week.
5 days a week.
And what are the what are those hours? Is it like after school-ish kind of hours?
Once school starts again, it will be after school-ish. We're looking at maybe Monday, Wednesday, Friday in the afternoons, like 1 to 4 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tuesday, Thursday evening times. Because there's already Gold Belt Heritage Institute, They already have hours on Tuesday evenings. So we're going to kind of piggyback with that and get some of their interns in there.
Yeah. And teenagers and all kinds of folks have jobs too, right? So they can fit. So you're not required to be there every day.
Correct.
But you're welcome to be there every day.
Exactly. If you find that this is where you feel like most safe, most elevated, most like, yes, I'm going to make this awesome thing with the rest of the community, we welcome you as much as you want to be with us.
And then I know that you're going to premiere these robes next summer at Celebration.
Correct.
Okay.
And they're only allowed to be worn by youth. Right?
Oh.
It's over the year, we're going to put in thousands of hours of work. We're hoping to do a little first dance event near or during Celebration. And the robes are both going to live at Zach Gordon Youth Center as permanent wearable art pieces, worn, again, only by youth during SHI's biennial celebrations, by graduation, new name parties, coming out parties, significant Native and non-Native events. Like, we're really excited that they're going to, like, they have a home already at Zach Gordon Youth Center.
So they'll be on display, but then for certain events, they'll be able to be used over the years.
Correct.
It's starting a tradition, really,
mm-hmm.
right? Of being able. Does that happen with other robes? Like, are they on display and then people wear them for events?
No.
Yeah.
No, we have a robe that's almost done called the Giving Strength robe that is the work of like 60 volunteer weavers. They all wove 5x5 squares.
Yeah.
That one is going to live at the Aware Shelter. We call it the Giving Strength robe because we went into it, each of us weavers, with prayer and strength and love toward survivors of sexual and domestic violence. And same, that robe will live on display, but also when someone comes in needing some extra strength, they can request to wear the robe at the OR shelter.
And how did these ideas germinate in your brain? How did these ideas come about?
These are all like trickle-down effect from Clarissa Rizal, my mother,
who
visioned the Weavers Across the Waters robe, also with 60 volunteer weavers. And that robe now lives at the Longhouse Evergreen College, the Evergreen College Longhouse in Olympia, Washington.
Hmm.
And that robe is intended to be worn by dignitaries as each dugout canoe makes its maiden voyage on the water. So it actually came up to Canada. It's come different places and been worn mostly by Wayne Price. renowned artist. But yeah, it's that's how it all starts.
Wow. Okay. And Nicholas, I want to ask you, so your plan over this year to sort of document this process a little bit, what's that going to look like?
I'll probably be videoing a lot of it, you know, while people are weaving, while people are spinning, working on the materials. I'll be taking photos, likely. You know, this isn't a definite thing.
Right, right.
But
it's,
yeah,
it can be amorphous a little bit, right? Because it's a year long. You can kind of switch it up as you go. But you want to sort of document the process and from beginning to end. And then maybe do you think you'll have like a product at the end that will be shown at somewhere along maybe with at the first dance?
Possibly. Yeah. We don't really know right now. You know, it's probably going to evolve as we go.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Will we see like postings during the year maybe? Like on, is there an Instagram that we're going to follow that's going to follow this progress?
Yeah, something like that. Some sort of social media online. Yeah.
We've got Zach Gordon Youth Center, who's definitely going to want to use that space or use that content.
Right.
Juneau Community Foundation is backing us, the Alaska Corporation, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation. We've got CCTHITA or Central Council Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, the Lily Hope Weaver Studio, and other private donors. And people can get in on this. This is the fun part. You can get in on this by sending your youth over or coming with your youth and hanging out tomorrow during 4 p.m. and 8 p.m. at Zach Gordon Center and launching this project. But you can also donate online through Juneau Community Foundation. We still need another $5,000 for materials and supplies, and we're hoping to raise that through the Juneau community.
Okay, yeah, and I know I'm going to put that link on our website.
Sweet,
but you can also go to junocf.org and just search for Weaving Our Pride, and that project will come up, and you have the opportunity to donate to this project. And on there, I think it was you were originally looking for $16,000 through that particular way of raising money. So it sounds like you've been pretty successful with that so far, and you just need this last little bit of funds, this $5,000. Mm-hmm.
The cool part is that we have an individual donor, Emma Goldman, who threw down the last $8,000. So anybody who donates a dollar right now is being duplicated by Emma Goldman's dollar.
Oh, so you have a matching
grant. Yep, we're already halfway. I mean, we're the last halfway. So come and do the first halfway with us, y'all.
Right. Okay. And then so this event tomorrow is to sort of a kickoff party. You won't be necessarily weaving tomorrow, but you're going to be doing other I'm getting a look. We might be weaving tomorrow. We're going to be learning some things. Because one of the things I saw in here was I want to hear about, which was learn to thigh spin, which I want to hear about. But this event is called Launching Community Pride. I just want to mention the details real quick, and then we'll talk about it a little bit. It's Friday, July 7th, tomorrow from 4 to 8 at Zach Gordon Youth Center, which is at 396 Whittier Street. So tell us a little bit about what we're going to experience tomorrow.
Yeah. What are we going to experience tomorrow? We're going to process some rainbow roving, all the six colors of the pride flag, and we're going to pull it apart and then spin it back together. It comes in a single ply yarn, but we're going to like taper it down so that it's a manageable strand, so we're not going to try to spin the entire skein together.
Right.
And then we have spinning pads made by our good friend Maria Abbott. Which keeps our leg from chafing, because if you have ever spun wool on your leg, it gets pretty tough.
I've worn wool on my legs, and I don't like it.
Yeah, you don't want it to rub over and over in the same spot. So we're going to do that with some pretty sweet canvas spinning pads and all the different colors. So hopefully one spinning pad for each color. We'll see how that plays out.
Okay.
We are also going to cut the Chilkat warp for the adjacent robe. So I'm calling these sibling robes, right?
Okay.
One Chilkat, one Raven's Tail. And we already have the Chilkat warp, thanks to Generations Southeast from CCTHITA and Ricky Tagaban, who spun it many years ago. So we've got the Chilkat warp. We're going to cut it and hang the first project while we're also spinning the rainbow warps for Raven's Tail project.
So this is a working party tomorrow.
Yes, that's good. Come and sweat with us.
Yeah,
come on.
Do it.
Yeah.
And you mentioned this at the top, but I just wanted to remind folks, we're talking to Lily Hope about the Weaving Our Pride event happening tomorrow. Who's invited to this?
Every person who wants to be part of something bigger.
Right. There you go. So age doesn't matter. Right.
Nope.
Orientation doesn't matter. It's anybody's invited to this event who wants to. And that's ongoing, right? Anybody can participate in this throughout the year.
Correct.
And you don't have to know how to weave.
Correct.
Yeah, because part of, I think what's lovely about you, Lily, is what you're doing is you're teaching people this way of weaving that then will hopefully have life after, right? Which it seems like, you know, with your project previous, the children's robes, you, how many people did you train during that, you said? It was like 20-something?
24 started them and 19 finished them.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, that's already 19 people who know how to do that, which is really, that's just amazing that that kind of tradition is being handed down, because it could easily have been lost, right? It could easily be lost. And that's not something we want to see. And so I think that's amazing that that's happening tomorrow. So what is, and thigh spinning, can you tell me a little bit about that?
We're going to take two pieces of bulky yarn or single ply roving.
Yeah.
And ply them on our leg, holding the two strands in one hand and essentially spinning them individually and then letting go and letting them ply together.
Oh, okay.
So it is a very slow process. We
usually
get like a half an inch spun every time we slide our hand down our thigh.
Yeah.
But it has been done through many, many different indigenous and non-indigenous generations, like peoples across the world. Some actually, the Japanese I knew like to spin things holding the items in their teeth. And they're actually really fast. I met this team of Ainu and it was like, wait a minute. Did you just, they can spin faster in their mouths than I can spin on my thigh.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, dang, can you come over here and do that?
Yeah, you're like,
stuff
with can
me?
I learn that? Yeah, I want to know how to do that.
Let's share some techniques here. Yeah.
And who designed the robes that are being made?
AI.
AI?
No, I'm just kidding. I mean,
I wouldn't be so
for reals, it really started with Sea Alaska Corporation sharing an image about this pride robe. And I reached out and said, oh, my goodness, who wove this beautiful rainbow robe?
Yeah.
And they said, nobody did. We generated this online.
Oh.
And I said, well, we should probably weave it. And then that snowballed into this of me asking all the people, you know, I'm going to pull in these six mentor artists and we're going to make this thing happen. And
I gotcha.
We're bringing it to life.
So I do want to mention again that you can donate to this at the Juno Community Foundation, junocf.org. You can search Weaving Our Pride and you'll find that out. And that those donations are tax deductible, which is also cool. But if somebody can't make it tomorrow, Lily, what do they do to get in touch about maybe when, like getting the schedule and figuring out how to, is this starting tomorrow and then it's going to continue on next week? The process is beginning.
We're jumping right into it next week.
And then, so how do people, if they can't make it tomorrow, what do they do?
You can send me an email, lilyhopeweaver@gmail.com. Happy to field those questions, and we can send you a calendar. Should be up and functional by next Monday or sooner. We have each of the mentor artists coming in tomorrow to fill out their calendar of when they're going to be available, and we'll know kind of like who's on Wednesday, who's on Friday, who's on Saturday.
Gotcha. And that is also, I want to give a shout out to Zach Gordon Youth Center, Jordan Niger over there, and sort of being the home for this.
Yes.
And you mentioned the other partners that are part of this. There's so many people backing this. But having the space to do it and the welcomingness to do it and the inclusiveness of being able to do it there and to create a safe space for this art to happen, I think is really beautiful.
Yeah. Many of us come to this work because it's where we feel the most safe, because it's not asking us to surrender to participate, because we resonate with the good feelings of co-creating something bigger than any one of us. The work is bigger than self, creates lasting positive change in the community.
I love it. So for more on Lily, you can go to lilyhope.com, junocf.org/fun/weaving-our-pride-robe-fun. There's a lot of dashes in there. I'll put the link on our website. And also you can go to juno.org and search for Zach Gordon Youth Center, and you can find out all about them as well.
And one more thing, tomorrow between 4 and 8 p.m., if you go to lilyhope.com/shop, there will be a limited edition set of pride earrings woven by me, woven by Ray Mills, woven by Ricky Tagaban, and half of all of those dollars, half of the profits, will go directly to support the materials and supplies for this project. So again, tomorrow between 4 and 8 p.m., lilyhope.com/shop, and get yourself some bougie pride earrings hand-woven by me, Ricky, and Ray, and support this project.
That's awesome. And we'll certainly have you back at some point for an update. Let's not wait until you get to that. Maybe when the first dance comes about, maybe before celebration, we'll hear back from Lily and we'll see these wonderful robes that are going to be created over the year. So thanks, Lily. Thanks, Nicholas, for coming in and telling us all about this.
Thanks, Boston.
Thank you.
Up next, Hollis Kitchen will be at Kindred Post tomorrow live sketching during First Friday. We'll catch up with her next on Juno Afternoon from KTOO. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. This is Juno Afternoon from your community-supported public media station, KTOO, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Hollis Kitchen is an Alaskan artist who paints landscapes, mountainscapes, and many other things for the fellow outdoor lover. She is also known to many as co-owner of Bustin' Out Boutique in downtown Juno. Tomorrow, she will be live sketching at Kindred Post during First Friday. I'm excited to chat with Hollis Kitchen today here live at Studio 2K, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. Gunnath Cheesh, Hollis, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you here. So let's get started on this. So you work in watercolor and ink, and you're going to be doing both of those tomorrow.
Yeah. So I do a lot of traditional mediums. So like watercolor, gouache, ink, pencil sketching, things like that. But I also do like more detailed work, some illustration. I also do some digital work as well. So kind of a mix of everything.
And when I always like to find out like when this started for you, did this get instilled in you as a youth? How did you find it?
Well, when I was very little, we lived in, Squetna, which is a small village. I don't actually know if it's still a inhabited village, kind of 45-ish miles outside of like the Anchorage area, but pretty isolated. 'Cause I think at the time you could get there by like boat or float plane. So kind of like Juno in some ways, but not quite landlocked. But yeah, so, you know, it was the early 90s and not a lot to do. So lots of art. And I just took to it and really fell in love with it and have been, you know, painting and creating my entire life. But really got into watercolor in about probably 2011, maybe 2012, like my senior year of college.
Okay.
Right around there. Just kind of really liked it because it was really portable. It was nice to be able to just kind of work on some stuff on the go and not have to worry about having a big setup all the time. So it was really, really nice that way. Yeah.
Well, is there something about the form of watercolor? I mean, it's nice that it's portable, right? But is there, because some people find it very difficult.
It definitely can be. The way I'd like to describe watercolor a lot of times is like, it's almost like painting backwards. Because usually when you're doing like acrylic or oil paint, you kind of get your dark lines down first and then you add your highlights. But with watercolor, because the brightest white on your painting is usually going to be the canvas, unless you're using a little bit of gouache or like a gel pen after for highlight, you want to start light and build up. So it's more similar to like drawing with ink or like with pencil in some ways, where you have to like really be careful with your lines because you can't always erase them. You can do a little bit of lifting here and there, but so that can be really challenging for a lot of folks because you really have to kind of like pay attention to how dark your colors are before you put them on the paper.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. And is there something about the type of paper?
Yeah. So within watercolor, 100% cotton paper works best. There's a lot of like lower quality papers that are a cellulose blend, so like wood pulp, but they don't absorb the pigment and they don't absorb the water as well. And so that can make it a lot more challenging to work with as well, because you're not getting the saturation and the vibrancy of the colors in the same way as you would on a cotton paper.
So I see. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I know you've said that for you, watercolor is the perfect medium to interpret the land and the sky. Mm-hmm. And why is that?
Well, especially in Southeast Alaska, I mean, we are part of like rainforests, right?
Yeah.
So it feels very fitting to use a water-based medium to interpret the landscape. But you get a level of transparency and a little bit of unpredictability with the watercolor, kind of like how we have with our fogs and mountain landscapes with the weather here. So that's why I love it. Because I have done some mountainscape paintings and things with like other medium, but I really love the effect of watercolor capturing fog and things, because it's hard to recreate otherwise, I feel like. Yeah.
Yeah. And are you working from memory? Do you work outside? Do you take pictures and then work from a picture? How do you get
all of the above? It really depends on what I'm working on.
Right.
So like most recently I had the opportunity to paint on one of the cruise ships. So I was on board painting for like 6 hours, and I had an idea of what I wanted to paint beforehand, but I took a few reference photos on the trip out to get on the cruise ship, just so I had those to look at while I was working, just to make sure I got my colors correct or how I wanted the effect and feel of my painting. But a lot of it is, it just kind of depends on what I'm working on. If I'm doing something that's a little bit more photorealistic, I'll definitely use a few reference photos, do some preliminary sketches, things like that. If I'm doing some of my more abstract things, I might just kind of look out the window for reference, but I might not necessarily use photo reference.
I see.
Yeah. And then plein air is always a lot of fun because you just kind of go wherever and paint.
Yeah, right? I'm always curious to know, how does the inspiration strike you? Let's say you're driving somewhere in town and you see a new area you haven't been to yet, or you see something, the color, the light is hitting something a certain way, and you go, I got to paint that?
Pretty much, yeah. Okay. And depending on where I'm at, I'm like, can somebody please like send me pictures of the fog today? Because I'm driving and I cannot stop anywhere to get pictures. So.
Right. And then there's like, is there something about, because with outdoor scapes and mountainscapes, and I think maybe somebody might think, they're all the same. Mm-hmm. But they're really not, right? Because they each have their own sort of individual story, right?
Yeah. Well, and it even varies so much across the state. Like,
just
because, I mean, we're in Alaska, so we're part of the Ring of Fire with like the tectonic plates and earthquakes and things like that. So depending on how the ground has shifted, the mountains are much steeper in some areas. Like Juneau, the mountains are very, very steep compared to like where I grew up in the Mat-Su, where they're still very large and tall, but it's not as all of a sudden there. It feels like it's more of a gradual climb most of the time. So
I see.
Yeah.
I see. So you have this, do you do like series of things? Do you do like in terms of, like, are you like triptychs or anything like that? Have you ever done anything like that?
I have. Yeah. So it depends on what I'm working on. So like I have kind of a series of three paintings that I did, or that are kind of more of a interpretation of wildflowers. And I have those as like card sets and things and art prints. And I did like fireweed and lupin and forget-me-nots. And so those I did all in a very similar style with more of a very limited color palette. So I pretty much just used like a tiny bit of yellow to kind of give a almost like a sunset feel to the paintings. But I pretty much just used like that and purple, or that and the blue and that and the pink for each individual flower.
I see.
And then a little bit of ink to add some more detail and things. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you, tomorrow you're going to be at Kindred Post. Mm-hmm. And well, what time are you going to be there? Is it? I think
it's 4:30.
It's the standard first Friday time,
standard.
Like 4:30 to 7 or something like that.
I mean, I'll probably be there early to help set up, but yeah.
Right. And you have to set up, obviously, because you're going to be painting. You're going to be doing some sketching, and you're going to be doing that live. But you'll probably also have some things available for people to purchase and take home.
Definitely.
I see you brought some stuff in the studio, which I will take pictures of and put on the website too. But let's see what do you have there.
So I recently have really gotten into something called surface design and things. So it's kind of like repeating patterns and things. So this is more like the digital artwork that I've done. And so I have like some washi tape I designed. I have 10 total designs. And then I have some stickers And then I have some Swedish dishcloths, which are really nice.
They're
really fun. I don't know if you've used them before, but they're kind of like that combination of like a sponge and a paper towel. So they're really...
I've used something like that. Yeah.
They're really great. They're really handy to have on hand because like I always forget to buy paper towels. And so like they're a little bit more eco-friendly too. But, but they're really handy and I love them. But
and why not have them be artistic at the same time?
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like as an artist, I'm always kind of looking for new ways to showcase my work in different aspects.
So
it seemed like a nice fit. And
And are you wanting to do shows outside of Juneau? Have you done that kind of thing? What is it that you're, where do you want to take your watercolor?
Oh, all over. I'm actually doing a pop-up event in September in Anchorage.
Okay.
I think it's at the, at Dos Manos Gallery up in Anchorage. I'll have that going on in September. And then, I do sell some of my arts and prints and cards like wholesale to different shops around the state as well.
Right.
And so just
so people can find it that way.
Yeah.
And then I know you also have your own website, holliskitchen.com, and that's kitchen with two I's,
yes.
KITCHIN. And Hollis is two L's and one S, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So holliskitchen.com. And that is where you can sort of, you're also on like Instagram and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Instagram primarily. A little bit on Twitter, but that's kind of because it's...
Or the new thing, Thread.
I haven't gotten on that one yet.
It just started yesterday.
I think you have to like... Oh, is that the new one from...
Instagram. Yeah, we don't want to talk about that. Whatever. Social media, blah. But you are on Instagram where people... What I'm getting at is that people can see your work there.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And what is your Instagram?
I have two. It's either at Hollis Kitchen or Hollis Kitchen Designs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. And you can, and you, because you get to see the artwork there. Mm-hmm. And then just briefly, I do want to mention that you and your day job is being co-owner of Bustin' Out Boutique, which is an awesome shop here in town that many people use.
Yeah.
And how's that going?
It's going good. Yeah. I mean,
because I know during the pandemic, you were one of the businesses that actually offered like curbside pickup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did that. And we still offer like Zoom fittings and online fittings for folks too.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, you still do that? Okay.
Yeah. I actually had one last week with somebody from up in Anchorage. But yeah, so that's a really good option for people that might not be able to get to Juneau, but still need to do a bra fitting. Or if they're still a little hesitant to get out, or if they're like immunocompromised, the online fitting's a really great option for a lot of people.
But you can also make a live appointment for that now. Yeah.
In person and walk-ins as well. Walk-ins are always welcome.
Yeah. You guys are right down there on Franklin Street, right?
Front Street. Like across from Ben Franklin downtown.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Okay. And of course that website is bustinoutboutique.com. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure to put a throw in there for your business.
Yeah.
And then also Kindred Post, which does these really cool monthly in-person events. A lot of times the artists that they book in there for the first Fridays are doing things like this where they're doing live sketching. Yeah. And that you can find out all the information from kindredpost.com. They're also on, they're on all the socials as well. So how do you, what are you going to be doing tomorrow during the event?
So I'm going to have my easel set up and I'm going to have a bunch of like smaller cut pieces of watercolor paper taped onto it. And I'm just going to either sketch what's in my head or around the store, or if somebody has a request and wants me to draw or paint something, I'll do that. And I usually will have the sketches that I do available for sale as well at the event.
That's kind of fun.
For like $20 or something. Cause yeah, it's just, it's a fun thing for me to do. I'm sketching anyway. And it's just nice to let other people see into the process of what I do because.
Is it hard to, are you going to be facing away from us so we're seeing what you're sketching?
Yeah, for the most part. And then, I mean, cause I did something similar last year at Kindred Post too. And so. Yeah. It's a lot of fun and I'll have like a little table set up with things. And
Nice. Is it nerve wracking at all to have people like watching you?
Not really.
No,
it's fun. I like it because I get to interact with people and answer questions because they're, especially with watercolor. Like I've taught a handful of watercolor courses before and I know it can be challenging to describe aspects of what I'm doing.
Right.
Verbally or things like that or through a camera. So it's really better to sometimes to answer questions in person because it's a lot of, I feel like with watercolor, figuring out the control of the water and the amount of pigment comes from lots of practice and like being able to see somebody actually do that in person helps a lot because you're like, oh, that's how much water you have on your brush. Or I can kind of visually see how wet the paper is versus just trying to read it from a book or
Cool. Yeah. So you'll be like taking questions while you're working.
Oh, yeah.
People can be like, why did you use that much, you know, for that particular tree or that particular mountain? Like the combination of water to color is going to be a certain amount, right?
And
does it change depending upon what you're making?
Oh, yeah, totally. It all depends on what, if it's like a first layer or if it's like the final detail layers, like there's definitely going to be more pigment to water on like the later layers versus the first layers and things. So, yeah.
Oh man, you're blowing my mind. Yeah. There's more layers. There's layers.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. That's amazing. Well, what you should do is go tomorrow to Kindred Post for First Friday, see Hollis Kitchen live in person, sketching with watercolor and ink and doing all of the wonderful things. And you can pick up, what was that pad called? The dish pad?
Swedish dishcloth.
Swedish dishcloth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those look really cool. I'm going to take a picture of them here in the studio and make sure we put that on the website so you can get a preview of what that looks like.
And there will be an event specific one. Print as well that I didn't bring today of one of my skunk cabbage prints, which is really fun.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Hollis, thanks so much for coming in. It's holliskitchen.com tomorrow at Kindred Post for First Friday from about 4:30 to 7:30, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it's so great to have you in the studio and break a leg tomorrow.
No, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So good. Yeah. Okay, this is Juno Afternoon from KTOO. We'll be right back with a preview of the Sea Alaska artists at the Sobolev Center.
This is Bird Note. We're hearing the calls of royal terns. The birds we call terns look like sporty versions of gulls. Like gulls, most terns are feathered gray and white, but terns are more streamlined, with slender pointed wings and spike-like bills. The black tern carries this sleek look into elegance, cloaking its aerodynamic shape in velvety black. Black terns breed in summer on secluded freshwater wetlands across the northern states and Canada. Here they show off another trait that sets them apart. While most terns make a living by plunge diving for fish, black terns also flutter like swallows over the surface of ponds, snatching insects in midair. Black terns migrate each spring and fall through the American heartland, traveling back and forth to wintering grounds off the coast of Panama and northern South America. But because of major losses of wetlands in their breeding range, especially in Canada's prairie provinces, black tern numbers have dropped dramatically since the 1960s. The future of this beautiful bird depends on protecting and restoring high-quality wetlands. Recent research shows that artificial nest platforms can enhance the tern's breeding success. You can find more about this research on our website, birdnote.org.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute is welcoming visitors to see the works of three artists in the Walter Sobolev Building this First Friday. Anna James, who does painting and form line, Diamond Williams with fur, leather, and beaded earrings, and Michael Wilson, who does shell buttons and abalone. That's going to be at 4:30 to 7 p.m. at 2 Sea Alaska Plaza, the Walter Sobolev Building. And joining me via Zoom to talk about tomorrow is Ayanna James. Hi, Ayanna.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
Awesome. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Like?
I would like to know a little bit about your history, how you got involved in art a little bit, all that kind of stuff. The kind of work you do.
It kind of just runs in the family.
Oh, nice. Okay. So, and what kind of work do you do?
Paintings.
Oh, paintings. Okay. And I know, I think on your website or on your your Instagram, which I think people should go to look at your work because it's really cool, which is instagram.com/a.james_art. And you can see all kinds of cool images with jellyfish. And also you look like you work with some cartoon elements. And it looks like you do just a little bit of form line kind of stuff. Yeah. Where does the inspiration to do like, I see this one here that's really cool. It's like a face, but it has black and white throughout it. And it's got like, it looks like it's got almost like a star pattern through it. But then there's like some cartoony kind of looking thing. So how do you decide, where does your inspiration come from?
She's a bit shy.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. I know it's hard. It's hard to be on the radio sometimes for sure. I totally get that. And that's, I mean, it's interesting because an artist sometimes, their expression comes through their art, right? As opposed to through speaking like on the radio. So I totally get that. But I know
really loves jellyfish. In this last trip we made to Oahu, and we were at Sherwood Forest, and we were there not even 5 minutes, and it's not a jellyfish. We thought it was a jellyfish, but it wasn't. It was a Portuguese man-o-war, and it wrapped around her leg.
Oh, wow.
So we didn't know what it was, so we went to the ER and everything, and like, what you don't know about these are? And it's like, no. Either way, she was a little disappointed because she didn't get the red vein stuff, just her legs folded up and everything. Either way, but we thought it was jellyfish. It was blue, pretty.
Oh.
But she really, jellyfish is like her favorite animal.
Oh, I see. And, okay.
In Hawaii, where our family's from, Oahu.
Right. I know, because I know in the notes I got, it says the Iona is Tlingit, Filipina, and Hawaiian, right?
Yep.
Yeah, nice. And so,
her grandfather is Owen James. He's a master carver from Huna.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. In Huna. And who am I talking to?
I'm her mother.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Mom. That's good. So, because I know it says I paint a lot of jellyfish. Some are in form line, and then some, and they come from your Hawaiian culture background, which is also nice. And so I'm just curious, like, do you see things like in the world that then you see a specific jellyfish and are you working from memory when you paint them? Or do you take a picture of them? Or are you finding things online and then sort of like seeing pictures online and then painting from those?
Pictures from online.
Okay. Right. Right. Cause I see you have one of my favorite characters. It looks like you have a Winnie the Pooh in here on your Instagram. I'm a Tigger fan myself. Cause I feel like Tigger is part of my personality a little bit. But I love all of the characters from Winnie the Pooh. What are some of these other characters on here? Are these also known characters? Like I see a little blue rabbit.
Rabbit?
Is that a rabbit? Who is that? I can't punch on it, but it's like a blue, it looks like a, is it a rabbit? I don't know. It's like a, it's a couple lines down on your Instagram.
Are you talking?
Oh, did you say Stitch?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I don't know that as unfortunately, but I recognize it now. Yeah, for sure. But these jellyfish are awesome. And then do you decide based on like, the color of the gel, do you change the colors in the painting, or are you painting what are you trying to match what the photo is of the jellyfish?
I just pick random colors.
Oh, nice. Okay. And I'm just curious, Iona, what is it about jellyfish that you love so much?
I don't know. I just really like them.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the way they move in the ocean, right? That they like, sort of have this flowing motion that I know I can't do, that I'm not able to move like that. So that's one thing about jellyfish that I really find interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so tomorrow, you're going to be at the Walter Sobolev building, at the new address to Sea Alaska Plaza, which I love, that was changed recently. And that is going to be from, Let's see here. Looks like you're going to be there from 4:30 to 6:45.
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay. And you're going to be, you're going to have, what are you going to have with you there tomorrow? You're going to have paintings and stuff?
Yeah, paintings and stickers.
Oh, and stickers. Okay. And are the stickers of the same things that you paint?
Certain designs.
Okay. Certain designs that you'll have that you'll be, that will be available for there. And I know it says you have your own business selling your paintings and other art. And sometimes you do hoodies and t-shirts. Is that right?
Yeah. I ran out of the hoodies.
Oh,
I only have like sizes for the shirts.
What, say that again one more time.
I ran out of the hoodies and I have kid sizes for the shirts.
Oh, kid sizes for the shirts. Okay. Yeah. The shirts and hoodies seem to go fast. People like that stuff, especially I would love to have a jellyfish sweatshirt. That would be kind of a really cool hoodie with a jellyfish on it. Am I able to find that through like your Instagram? Do you put post on there? Where else do you post about stuff that goes on sale?
My Facebook page.
Oh, your Facebook page. Okay. Is that also A.James in that way? Or how do you, what is your Facebook page? Where, how can people find you?
A. James Art.
A. James Art. Okay, cool. A. James Art on Facebook. And you, you post like when you're having a sale and things like that?
Yeah.
Okay. I also know that, I also wanted to mention this because I think this is really cool. It says, some of your work is to support the LGBTQ community, MMIP, Every Child Matters, as well as your cultures, Tlingit, Filipino, and Hawaiian. And is there an inspiration that comes for a specific design in one of those areas? Are you trying to, are you looking to express, you know, various different feelings about in those particular arenas?
I guess just try to express the feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, art is great for that, isn't it? Like to be able to say something like, I feel like, cause I think, do you feel like a jellyfish sort of, cause I mean, when I look at your work, like each one has like a distinct sort of feeling to it. And like it has, it feels like it tells a story. Are you, do you feel like you're telling a story when you are painting a jellyfish?
For certain jellyfish, yeah.
For certain jellyfish, okay. How about the one that, and when do you go, and how often do you guys get to Hawaii?
Once or twice a year.
Yeah, yeah. And are you going out and you, I mean, are there specific, are there different, is that, because that, we don't have jellyfish in Alaska, right?
No, we do.
Oh, we do, okay. So
clear white one, yeah, and some red ones.
Oh, okay.
Not like, I don't know.
Yeah. And do you see like different ones? I mean, like different species of jellyfish in Hawaii that, that are, that, that speak to you a little bit more or that are more colorful?
Not really.
No. Okay. Yeah. You just see, and the, but is there, what is it about a jellyfish that like, when you see one, you go, I got to paint that one. Is it the color of the jellyfish?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the color. It kind of says, okay, that's a good, and it's like, and what kind of paint do you use?
Acrylic.
Acrylic. Okay. And are you painting on, so are you painting on canvas then?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And how big are these? Are these the size of them? Are they sort of like small squares? Are they larger?
They're different sizes.
Different mix of sizes. Okay. Yeah.
She's got some that are like 2-3 inches wide on each side, and some of them have magnets on it.
Oh.
Like I have one of her jellyfish ones that's about that big on my refrigerator, or she'll add magnets on the back. She's got 8x10s, 10x12s.
Oh,
and
wow.
And then they just get bigger.
Oh, that's so cool. That is so cool. Well, Ayanna, I hope you have the best time tomorrow. You're going to be there with Michael Wilson and Diamond Williams as well, the featured artists for the Sea Alaska Plaza First Friday event at the Walter Soboleff building. That's so cool. Your artwork is really great. I want to remind people where they can find it. You can go to Instagram and you can go to a.james_art on Instagram, or on Facebook, you can search A. James Art and you can see all of Ayana's pretty awesome art with jellyfish, cartoon characters, and some other things. I even see a little bit of form line. I see a form line whale here, I believe. So it's really cool stuff. So congratulations on your work, and break a leg tomorrow.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for coming on Juno Afternoon. It was really nice to talk to you. Okay.
Have a good day.
Okay, bye. And that's going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a terrific rest of your Thursday. On tomorrow's show, a discussion with Perseverance Theater about the upcoming STAR program, and updates from Hearthside Books and Juno Artist Gallery. Juno Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. I'd like to thank all of our guests today. And thank you to you. Have a glorious Juno evening.